The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. This is the January 2023 issue. And the first article is a very relevant and important article entitled Hearing Aids, A New Era Dawns for Improved Hearing. Hearing aid styles have improved tremendously in recent decades. Newer hearing aids are less visible than older models with much better sound quality. Many options match modern lifestyle and communication needs. So why don't more people use them? According to estimates, only 14% of American adults age 50 and older with hearing loss use hearing aids. Not being able to communicate can make life lonely, confusing, and frightening. It can affect cognition as well. Two of the major reasons why people don't use hearing aids are access and cost. These are less of an issue now that people can buy hearing aids without a prescription at stores and online. If you're considering a hearing aid or are looking to update your current aid to better suit your needs, read on. There are several ways to increase hearing aid satisfaction. You may have already taken steps, acknowledging your hearing loss, having your hearing tested, and looking into solutions to your hearing challenges. Knowing your specific type of hearing loss helps to determine what style of hearing aid might work best for you. How well hearing aids function depends on many factors, including the type and severity of the hearing loss. If you expect a hearing aid to restore perfect hearing, you're bound to be disappointed. Think about your goals. Choose a device that's right for you, and this depends on your specific needs. There's a little picture right next to this article, and it says, traditional hearing aids make sounds louder and channel them into the ear canal. Hearing aids come in many different styles. They differ in size and how they fit the ear. Some are small enough to fit deeply in the ear canal, making them almost invisible. The most widely sold aid are those that fit behind the ear. Going on with the article, the first section is entitled Traditional Hearing Aids. Traditional hearing aids make sounds louder and direct them into the ear canal, a process known as air conduction. This allows for better access to sound inside the ear. These hearing aids come in many styles. The most widely sold aids are those that fit behind the ear. In general, smaller hearing aids are less powerful and have a shorter battery life. How well you hear in different frequencies factors into which hearing aid style may work best for you. The size and shape of the outer ear, especially the ear canal, also may rule out certain styles. For example, in the canal styles can be hard to fit in smaller ears. And if you have trouble handling small objects, a small hearing aid may not be workable. Some medical conditions like ear drainage, irregular ear formation, and hearing loss that's rapidly getting worse also may dictate which hearing aid style is best. You can hold a phone over most hearing aids, which can greatly improve the ability to communicate. The first kind of hearing aid is called completely in the canal, CIC. This is the smallest and least visible type. All parts, including the battery, are in a tiny shell, known as a casing, that fits deep inside the ear canal. A thin plastic pull cord on the aid sticks out into the bowl-shaped part of the ear to help in its removal. People with mild to moderate hearing loss can use the CIC type. It offers few options, like volume control or multiple microphones. The next kind of hearing aid is called the in-the-canal hearing aid. This aid fits partly in the ear canal, but not as deeply as a CIC aid. The outer edge of the aid extends into the bowl of the ear. ITC aids can benefit people with mild to moderate severe hearing loss. ITC aids often are more powerful than CIC aids. Those are the ones that are completely in the canal, with more options for add-on features. Like CIC aids, ITC aids can be difficult to handle and insert. Some users also may find it difficult to replace the batteries. Then there's the kind called in-the-ear. This style fits into the bowl-shaped area of the outer ear. It comes in a full shell style, which fills most of the bowl-shaped area of the ear. It also comes in a half shell style, which fills the bottom part of the bowl-shaped area of the ear. A low profile option fills the bowl-shaped area of the ear, but has a shallower fit. ITE, in other words, in-the-ear aids, are suitable for people with mild to severe hearing loss. They can be more powerful than smaller aids, and they can accommodate more options, like telecoil and directional microphones. The battery is larger and easier to handle. ITE aids pick up more wind noise than the smaller ITC type. Remember, ITC is in the canal. Then there's the behind-the-ear hearing aid called BTE. This style has two parts. A small plastic casing rests behind the ear and contains the hearing aid circuitry, the microphone, the amplifier, and the speaker. The casing often connects to a custom-made ear mold, which is an earpiece, by a plastic tubing. The earpiece directs amplified sound into the ear canal. BTE hearing aids work well for almost all types and severities of hearing loss. BTE aids may offer the greatest flexibility and improvement in hearing, especially for more severe hearing loss. BTE aids are the easiest to take care of, partly because changing the battery is easier when compared with other styles. BTE aids usually need fewer repairs than other styles do. But some people just don't have enough space between the ear and the side of the head to make a BTE aid work. Also, this style can pick up a lot of wind noise. You may have to hold a phone closer to the microphone at the top of your ear. Then there's the receiver in the canal, or receiver in the ear type. These typically have a small casing that fits behind the ear and houses the microphone and amplifier. Then there's a tiny wire that connects the casing to the speaker that sits in the ear canal. The speaker can be fitted into the ear canal with a custom ear mold or a soft, flexible, dome-shaped tip. This type of hearing aid is small and less obvious. Because the receiver is close to the eardrum, whistling or squealing is less than with the open-fit BTE aids. Speaker replacement can happen in the hearing aid specialist's office, avoiding a factory repair. Earwax can affect RIC and RITE receivers. In addition, these aids have a shorter battery life. Then there is BTE, RIC, and RITE aids, which can be fit with a vented dome-shaped tip in the ear canal. This leaves the ear canal largely open. And is this type of hearing aid is commonly used for mild hearing loss and mild to moderate high-frequency hearing loss. It's best for people who have typical or near-typical hearing in low frequencies. People with more severe hearing loss often can't use the open-fit style. It doesn't offer enough volume and can cause feedback. Because most of the ear canal is left open, individuals can use their remaining hearing for lower pitch sounds, which are able to pass directly to the eardrum, and the hearing aid selectively amplifies higher pitch sounds. Leaving the ear canal open often makes the individual's own voice sound more natural, but this style is limited in how much volume it can produce. Now we're going to talk about over-the-counter hearing aids. In August 2022, the Food and Drug Administration approved sales of certain hearing aids without a prescription. The move represents a major change that for many with diminished hearing will make the devices easier to get. Many issues are not resolved. A brief rundown of the benefits and drawbacks of this new Food and Drug Administration order. First, an additional option, but not necessarily a substitute. Hearing professionals stress that an exam and fitting by an audiologist or hearing aid specialist remains the most effective way to tailor a hearing aid to your specific needs. But not everyone has access to a hearing aid specialist. The availability of non-prescription devices at pharmacies, drugstores, and online now gives access to people in rural and medically underserved areas. It is not the right option for everyone. Non-prescription hearing aids are for people with self-perceived mild to moderate hearing loss. For example, those who have trouble hearing in a group or who need to turn the volume up high on the radio. If you have severe hearing loss, you are not able to hear conversations in quiet settings, or you can't hear loud sounds like noisy cars or trucks passing, the new non-prescription hearing aids are not likely to help. You need to see a hearing professional. The FDA estimates that the change will save people on average about $2,800 on a pair of hearing aids. That's because more manufacturers will emerge, increasing competition and lowering prices for prescription and non-prescription models. Now we're going to turn to another interesting article, which is in News and Our Views in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of January 2023, and it's entitled, A Promising Potential New Weight Loss Drug. There are several Food and Drug Administration-approved weight loss drugs, including two also approved for treating diabetes. When these drugs are used in tandem with lifestyle changes, weight loss typically ranges from 5 to 15% of body weight. Researchers are now studying another diabetes drug called tirzepatide or Mounjaro with promising results. The new study, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, followed over 2,500 individuals with an elevated body mass index, or BMI. No participants had diabetes, although some had prediabetes, meaning their blood sugar levels were elevated, but not yet high enough to be considered diabetes. For 72 weeks, participants received weekly injections of tirzepatide in 5, 10, or 15 milligram doses, or they received injections with no medication, which is called a placebo. In addition, they were instructed to engage in 150 minutes of physical activity a week and to follow a healthy, calorie-restricted diet. Those given the 5-milligram dose saw an average decrease of 15% of their body weight. Those given 15 milligrams saw an average of 20.9% decrease. Compared with those given a placebo, those on tirzepatide also saw bigger benefits in blood pressure, cholesterol, and waist circumference. And 95% of those with prediabetes saw their blood sugar levels return to the standard range, as compared with 62% of those given a placebo. That's kind of an interesting result, since those who were given the placebo also were told to exercise and follow a low-calorie diet. The diabetes medications currently approved for weight loss are liraglutide, or Saxenda, and semaglutide, or Wegovy. These medications are known as GLP-1 receptor agonists. Tirzepatide acts the same way, but also has a separate effect on a different hormone receptor. It's possible that the greater weight loss seen with tirzepatide may be due to its effects on two different receptors, rather than one. All three drugs had common side effects: nausea, diarrhea, and constipation. Tirzepatide is not yet approved as a weight loss drug, but it was recently granted fast-track review process. In the meantime, there are other approved medications that you can discuss with a healthcare provider. The next article in News and Our Views is New Hope for Celiac Disease. People with celiac disease have one main treatment against the disease's effects on the digestive system: cut gluten out of their diets. But a drug testing is showing promise against the disease too, and could help protect people with celiac when they unintentionally ingest gluten. An initial study of the drug, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, involved 163 people who had celiac disease and followed a gluten-free diet. For 6 weeks, participants in four different groups took various levels of the drug, from zero, in other words, placebo, to low, medium, and relatively high doses. 30 minutes later, they ate a biscuit containing gluten. Participants in the three groups that took the drug had fewer signs of intestinal problems than did those who took the placebo. About 26% of those who took the placebo rated the drug's effectiveness as poor. That percentage was dramatically smaller, from 7 to 10% among those given the drug. Side effects were relatively mild, with the most common being headache, nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, and abdominal pain. Those side effects occurred at similar rates in people taking the drug and in those taking the placebo, suggesting that the effects were related to gluten ingestion and not the drug. The drug, called ZED1227 or TAK227, while under investigation, targets the activity of transglutaminase 2, an enzyme found in the lining of the intestine. This enzyme is a key player in triggering the reaction of the immune system that marks celiac. Mayo Clinic experts say that the results offer an encouraging early path toward better treatment for celiac disease. Now, continuing with the Mayo Clinic health letter, we're going to go to an article entitled "Opioids Deadly But Still Needed." Opioids are the deadliest drug class in the medical world, and opioid addiction has destroyed countless lives. Yet opioids are still being prescribed. Here's why. Opioids are powerful tools against pain. When taken by the right person for the right reason, in the right form, at the right dose, and for the right length of time. Finding a balance between pain control and the dangers of these drugs can be challenging. And it makes sense to closely consider who should take them and how they should be taken. Healthcare providers make complex assessments and decisions to balance benefits and risks when prescribing opioids. You also have a role to play by learning the process and working closely with your provider when opioids are prescribed. When your provider prescribes an opioid, you can expect the standard of care to include screening for potential complications. If this doesn't happen, ask your provider about potential downsides to taking these medications. There are many risk factors for complications. First is age. People between ages 18 and 45 have a higher risk of opioid use disorder. In addition, people age 65 and older are at higher risk of an overdose. Another risk factor is a history of substance abuse. Also, mental health conditions like depression or anxiety, unstable home or social situation, use of other addictive or sedative medications like benzodiazepines or muscle relaxants, and breathing issues or heart conditions. Opioids can worsen these, causing risk of respiratory failure. Also, kidney and liver disease, as these organs are responsible for breaking down and eliminating the opioids. Risk factors do not necessarily exclude you from taking an opioid, but your provider needs to carefully consider risks versus benefits. Risk-reducing measures, like giving a prescription for naloxone, also called Narcan, a drug that temporarily reverses an opioid overdose, may be discussed. Opioids are typically prescribed where, 1, there is acute pain after an injury or surgery, 2, non-prescription medication and behavioral pain management techniques are not effective in managing acute pain, 3, other prescription pain medications for chronic pain have not worked, 4, there is cancer-related pain or pain from another serious illness where there is no expectation of recovery. In contrast, research does not support using opioids for pain originating from damage or dysfunction of the nervous system like diabetic neuropathy. The majority of chronic pain sources, pain with no clear source of ongoing tissue injury, or pain rooted in psychological conditions like depression. Form refers to how the medication is designed to be released into the body. When choosing the right form of opioid, there are many factors to consider: low or high potency, short or long effect, tablets, dissolving capsules, patches or injections. Which form to use and by which route is usually based on a variety of factors. These include why the drug is needed and the person's needs and other health conditions. First, there are low to medium potency opioids. These are taken by mouth as needed for acute pain and include tramadol, morphine, and oxycodone. Then there are long-acting opioids and opioids in skin patch form, drugs like extended-release forms of oxycodone or morphine and fentanyl patches are used for certain chronic pain conditions, cancer pain, and end-of-life care. They also may be used for people who have developed tolerance to opioids due to regular use. Finally, there are intravenous and intramuscular opioids. People in the hospital or having a procedure or who cannot take the medication by mouth may need these forms. You also need to think about the right dose. Opioids come in a variety of doses. The higher the dose, the greater the pain relief. The higher the dose, the higher the risk of complication. Usually people start on a low dose and move to a higher dose only if needed. If someone has been taking an opioid for a long time and the form of the drug will be changed, the new dose is usually dropped to reduce the risk of problems like overdose. Do not increase your dose without talking with your care team. Also, do not take the medication more often than you are told. If your prescription indicates to take every 4 hours, don't take it sooner. This can be life-threatening. Healthcare providers should prescribe opioids for the shortest period of time needed to manage pain. They usually stop prescribing opioids as soon as other medications and forms of treatment are helpful. Research shows the following about treatment with opioids. The longer someone takes an opioid, the higher the risk of opioid overdose and addiction. Limited quantity prescriptions lower the risk that opioids in the household will be available to other people. Overprescription of opioids has contributed to increasing the community opioid supply. This is directly linked to rising national trends in addiction and overdose. And the longer the treatment, the greater the effects on a person's cardiovascular, gastrointestinal, respiratory, endocrine, immune, and central nervous system. It's a complex decision. Prescribing an opioid is not a simple decision. Careful consideration is necessary to make a customized recommendation for each person. Educating someone with an opioid prescription about side effects, addiction, and overdose dangers, safe storage, and eventual disposal is critical. Recent advances now permit gene testing called pharmacogenomics to determine how opioids are processed by different people. Companies specializing in this technology provide people with lists of drugs that are most likely well tolerated and those to avoid. Pharmacogenomic testing is not available everywhere, although some providers partner with outside companies to perform testing. The cost varies depending on the test. Some insurance policies may cover pharmacogenomic testing. It's recommended that you contact your insurance provider about coverage prior to testing. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.